Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is AP Taylor talking to you on a team of voices. And this is our open poetry show. So if you are a fan of All Poetry, which is where we hang out, and you are have the common sense to come and join our group, a team of voices, you can follow along with the links on the board, and you can contribute a poem to be read, or you can do a SoundCloud, even better. We just go through a set of poems. I've got Deborah Lee here to join me. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm well. How about you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Very well. I should say a few things about that song that we just heard. That's Just Like Firewood by The Saints. It was released in 1982. Great lyrics. The song was actually written by the front man and lead singer, Chris Bailey, of the band, and was later covered by Bruce Springsteen on one of his albums. So fine song, as I said, great lyrics, great lyricist, and the Saints kept on going on until 2022, when unfortunately Chris Barty passed away. So they are no more as a band, but certainly had a long life in the singing. How are you going, Deb?
Bad. How about you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, good. It's been a good week. I've managed to get out and about, and I'm getting over my ills that I had a few weeks ago, and I will actually be up in Sydney for Monday night. So I'll be there Monday and all day Monday, and then for Tuesday, and wander back Tuesday afternoon. So looking forward to that. First time I've had a trip in a number of weeks, and you can only do those if you're in one place. So it's always good to go back to Sydney. I'm very fond of Sydney. Yeah?
Yeah, I know you are. And you like the business part of it too, because you like to flex your brain.
Yeah, I've always liked the business world in Sydney. It's more straightforward than Melbourne. Melbourne's always been a bit more about long-term relationships and understandings, and the Sydney business scene basically happens because people, you know, think they're getting a good deal and they're prepared to change. And as I said, I always like the feel of Sydney, so it's nice to be back.
Not to mention the restaurant that you'll eat at while you're there.
Sorry, Deb?
I said not to mention that restaurant that you'll eat at while you're there.
Yeah, well, look, I've loved this restaurant for 20-odd years. It's been there for 25 years. It's called Fish at the Rocks, for those people who tend to visit Sydney down the track. Very, very nice family-run sort of restaurant. Does very simple things very well, and that's why it's there after 25 years. So looking forward to being there again, and gone nice and quiet, Deb, and gone for the hotel that juts into the harbour. So, you know, if you're going to do it, might as well do it properly. So we've got a really good group of poems, and we've got poems from that have been sent to us, and then Deb, also we've got a few poems, I think, from your show earlier in the week that we didn't get through.
Yes, sir. I have four. Three of them have recordings, and the other needs you to read it. And I had reached out to them and told them I'd be moving it over because of the studio.
So, and we've got a classic poem as well that I saw that you put up on the board, Deb.
Yes, I did. I think you'll like this one. It should be an easy read as far as like the rhyme and the flow and the feel.
Well, why don't we start with the classic? You're right, I did like this because I've read it. Before we started, am I allowed to start there?
Hey, dude, it's your show.
Why not? Who's going to say no? I mean, you can say no, but you know, apart from yourself, who's going to say no? So I am going to go and put that on the board. And it is The Heart of the Tree by Henry Kyler Bunner. And, Deb, it goes a little bit like this. Does he plant... Who plants a tree? He plants a friend of sun and sky. He plants the flag of breezes free, the shaft of beauty towering high. He plants a home to heaven and nigh, for song and mother croon a bird, in hushed and happy twilight heard, the treble of heaven's harmony. These things he plants. He plants a tree. What does he plant? He plants a tree, he plants cool shade and tender rain, and seed and bud of days to be, and years that fade and flush again. He plants the glory of the plain, he plants the forest's heritage, the harvest of a coming age, the joy that unborn eyes shall see. These things he plants a tree. What does he plant? He plants a tree, he plants in sap and leaf and wood, in love and home and loyalty and far cast through of civic good. His blessing on the neighbourhood who in the hollow of his hand holds all the growth of all their land. A nation's growth from sea to sea stirs in his heart, who plants a tree. End poem.
Beautiful read.
So, there you go.
And you often write poetry that could be taken in multiple ways, and I thought that this one nailed that technique too, with the rhyme and flow, so I thought you would like it.
Yeah, agree. And, Deb, I had, before I started, I've got an alternate verse for that poem.
Oh, cool.
You ready? It goes a bit like this. What does he plant? He plants a tree. He plants the wisps of branches near. The shade from the sun's heat as flee, while outside this sanctuary many steer towards water or into shadows with fear, for many the predator here will spy, waiting in darkness launched and find within the branches a nest of fears plea through the hearts of those who plant a tree. End verse.
You know, I'm thinking that the author would have really enjoyed those words. I you did it beautifully.
So there you go. I really liked it. I really liked the poem. I think it's great choice. I wouldn't be writing alternate verses if I didn't think it sort of was kind of cool. But it is. It's kind of cool. So, yeah, that was fun. Anyway, there you go. It's always good to have a spare 6 or 7 minutes before the show. And that's what I was doing, Deb. I was doing...
6 or 7 minutes. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, 6 or 7 minutes. It didn't look same. Oh, anyway, that's what I was doing. So, let us go to the board. We might actually get one of the poems that we have a reader for, a SoundCloud for. And I was thinking we might go with the Gerald poem, Deb, because, as you know, I'm a big fan of Gerald's writing, and he always has a different perspective on things, which is lovely. So this is Sunrise in Pink by Gerald Green, and it goes a bit like this.
Sunrise in Pink, written and read by Gerald Green. The sound of my boots on Crystal Bridge brings back what I've fought to never recall, the crunch of unforgiving, frozen snow. Crunch, 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 in a rhythmic beat like broken drums, driving dissonance of an untuned orchestra. Or was it so well tuned that only those with jackboots understood the melody? I once looked at footprints in snow, noticing all pointed in the same direction. There was no return. Today's pink horizon I'd gotten up to see is suddenly overcast by long past memory. I pause. The crunching stops. Relief comes slowly as distant pink returns, allowing time to check my wrist and see the seal of evil men, confirming what I know, something newer generations deny. I can't go on. Pink will have to wait to greet me on a warmer day.
See, now there's a perfect example of Gerald Green being with footprints in the snow and having the sound of the footprint in the snow remind him, so distant, sense of evil men. I thought that was lovely. But Deb, what did you think?
You know, I'm always impressed by Gerald, and you just never know where he'll take something. And, you know, the part that stuck out for me is where it said, I once looked at footprints in the snow, noticing all pointed in the same direction. There was no return. And that gave me reason to pause there. I wasn't expecting the one-way journey. But I also like how he went from those crunching boots down to when the crunching stops and the relief comes and the pink comes. So, you know, obviously we're finally at spring and the new is coming. And at the end, I can't go on. Pink will have to wait to greet me on a warmer day. It's just, I didn't expect something so powerful and so it grabbed me. Very, very impressive. But he always is, like I said, very unexpected, very amazing.
There's a degree that takes you by surprise when he goes there, but not brilliantly written. And as I said, just the perspective is always something that sort of comes at it from a 90-degree angle, but always sort of spot on. It's really, really interesting. So thank you, Drew. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. I've got another one up on the board now, which I will read also from your purple set of poems, Deb. This is by L.G. Mace, and it's called Light Purple Flocks in a Country Garden. It goes a bit like this. Light purple flocks crowded against the grey-aged garden fence, densely packed together, they're immeasurably quite dense. The purple colours hedges closer to blue, but who can question one of Mother Nature's most prestigious hue? Such a bucolic scene for any country wayfarer to see. Oh, what heaven I'd experience if I were but a bee. End poem. That's kind of fun. That, yeah, it's kind of fun. It's very quixotic, really. I love the words, and I loved how she finished the poem. It's kind of fun. What did you think?
Yeah, the light purple flocks in the country garden is an extremely visual title, which sets the mood, and you could see the image before she even started in her poem. And then the descriptions in there as well, they're purple colors, hedges closer to blue. And personally, that color right there, that hedges closer to blue, is like periwinkle. So my mind is, you know, filled with periwinkle flowers right now. And oh, what heaven I'd experience if I were but a bee. And great ending to imagine yourself as that bee on a flight from beautiful smelling flower to the next and working. I liked it. Great brevity.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really like that sort of sense. Again, a poem of perspective. You know, you sit there and you go, well, you know, there, but for the wings of a bee go I, type thing. And I kind of like that about a poem when you get that sort of different sense of perspective. Yeah. So thank you to LG for putting that onto your board. And let me have a quick look. I was going to have a go at the poem by Lorion next, Deb. And then probably a SoundCloud after that. So we might sort of do that. And I should say, you know, Lorion always is a fantastic supporter of our show and of the group. He is a person who writes a heck of a lot of poems, and he writes a lot of poems in a style that you know is akin to some of the older poets from the sort of Elizabethan era of, sometimes, and I think this one's in that same sort of spirit. So this is Caviness, and so we'll see how I go with this one, Deb. And it goes a little bit, ye the drear, desolate and barren fields of despair and oppression. Hark the noble paean of true forgivers blossoming in billows upon the Sabbath of the righteous ones and exalted therefore from transgression, as the hymns of reapers of the morrow shall resound in the willows. Ye, the huddled masses of the destitute and lorn of the trodden land, know there is hope amidst the unyielding fate of the swift sword, when the vintages of dirt and grime shall be rife by the mighty hand, and shall sow the countless seeds of the compassion of the Lord. Mourn the cadent souls who have perished in the bells that chime anew, when the seraphim of yore of us wines upon their gentle spirits into heaven, cleansing a grievous country of division and discontent in time, with the might and main bellowing, bracing tempest and leaven. Stand beside me, just brethren, as we march to the glory of liberty, where manacles of slavery shall not bond ye in shame any longer, as we shall sing those praises of hallelujah together in the grace of the forefathers of universal suffrage, whose voices grew thereafter stronger. Let not the boundless words of a laudable constitution be lost in vain, and tarnished in the lore of men and women of an unremitting toil, of a nation of the brave, the poor, and the meek, of stain and slain, weaned in the bosom of the rainbow colours of this wondrous soil. Rise from the fray of war, and follow a clamour of freedom besought, amidst the ephemeral supplications of the fed bare and forgotten, bear witness to careless whims, stirring contempt, imbuing the juvenescence of the resilient sons and the daughters begotten. Begone the shadow of misgivings that lingers o'er the guise of hope, where the infinitesimal dreams become promises of the nation's reality. Clamber with denizens of beholders onto the edge of the lofty slope, where the oath of rectitude blesses thee with such comfort and serenity. Behold the guardians, the proud men of colour standing by gallant brethren, striving steadfastly for the innate rights of America that entreat equal justice. Stately are the paramount colours of a flag waving before laden children. Pecavmius, let us not falter in the temptation, but rid the injustice. Let not this country be torn any longer by self-righteous division. Instead, united by the will of the devoted people of this great land, where the sweet voices of the echoes of freedom bring a glorious vision, and we stand all as Americans, holding in hand to hand, in poem. What did you think, Deb?
No, just as impressed now as I was over, what was it, about 8 or 9 years ago. And this was one of Frank's earlier pieces. This is around the time that I guess the best way to put it would be, was introduced to his work. As a matter of fact, I was doing the front page picks when this was picked, and I had made a notation to him that Captain B2 was the one who nominated him. And I was looking at the side there. It's a multi-award-winning poem. And although all of it was great, what still stands out is the one piece particularly, "Behold the Guardians of Proud Men of Color Standing by Gallant Brethren, Striving Steadfastly for the Innate Rights of America That Entreat Equal Justice." And the thought that, I mean, that could be a beautiful part for any politician to use in a speech nowadays, because we still need to strive for that innate right of everyone, and that just stood out for me.
Yeah, for me, the last two stanzas, to be honest, any piece of that could be picked up and used as words to represent a country and a country that is bigger than the sum of its parts. And God knows we could use some language like that in our political debate.
The part you mentioned there, especially the first few words, "Let not this country be torn any longer by self-righteous division,"
yep.
It almost put me in the same tone of thought as "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for you." It just had that kind of feel to it. So, yeah,
yep.
I see why you pointed that out.
Agreed. It was really beautifully written, Lorraine. It was. And it sort of builds to that lovely sort of crescendo of words at the end. And, I really like it. I always enjoy reading Lorraine's work. And this was another example of that. It's sort of a poem that you get into as you get into the words and you get into the meanings.
And I have to admit that it's very interesting to hear his voice in my head from hearing him read so many times, mixed with your voice as you read. It's an interesting mix to hear the both of you at the same time. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, it was fun. I was thinking Titus put a poem in for my show, and then of course, unfortunately, due to your technical difficulties, his poem for your show wasn't read. So I thought what I might do is do Titus's first poem now, and then another, and then come back and do the second one, because I know Titus often listens at this sort of time, but it's getting pretty early in the morning. So poem up and go from there, I think, Deb.
Sounds like a plan.
And I should say, too, more often than not, we do get a poem from Titus, and it's always great joy to have them on board and to listen to them because of the way he writes, but also the work that he puts into actually, you know, putting the poems down and presenting them for us. So the first one we have today from him is up on the board, and it is now in SoundCloud version, and I'll play that now.
"Each a beautiful trait. Long forgotten was it not, to reprimand the past given this bearing, here among poets who cared enough to understand the meaning of the word love, it sung to sleep my loneliness. Then afterwards we care enough to understand the flaws, to right the wrongs, make do, the birds would sing, to bring the timeline that was to illustrate the writing style that women from the 18th century do employ. Sanguinity and merriment, this domain, the beauty through her words I do enjoy. How virtuous a task, yet able not to master full intent, the metaphor 'twas meant to elude, or if include, then should I ask, politely so, for feedback one has lent. Alleviate with balm, this charm offensive when in fact fully not, too obscure, oneself to return one day. Well, this is how I live. A troubadour who simply compels a wealth of words, the equerry to harem a vain aim it would impeach upon rudeness to some. Dispel the theory that all men are the same, enlightens not, whereby the rule of thumb, but a man who, like the fool, did long ago fall in love with what she could have said, he would appear cognitively more the beau. Had he led these women on, 'twill have led to no end of pain and suffering, although words and women favoured by God's alt wine, women and song, I can compare God's mindful sobriety and private thoughts.
I really like this part. It's very thoughtful and uses some really interesting words. And it's at this point that I have to stop and go down and have a look at the comment by Kevin's helper, an AI version of Kevin. I kid you not. Did you not? And it has a critique there. And it says, however, the language used is somewhat formal and repetitive, which can make it difficult to engage with the poem emotionally. Consider simplifying some of the phrases and adding more vivid imagery. I'm pausing totally deliberately here because, of course, they break deliberately. Just so that I can add my critique of that critique. You ready for my critique of it, Deb?
Yeah, because I have a few choice words for Mr. AI Helper.
I'm going to give a very short critique of that AI Helper critique and say, bullshit. Now it's your turn, Deb.
You were more polite than I planned on being, but I totally concur. I think that it would take artificial intelligence to say something like that after hearing that poem. We have feelings through it, like the feelings of loneliness, love. There's alleviate with the balm, this charm offensive when in fact fully not, too obscure. I mean, it's just, I don't know anybody else on this entire site that writes like Titus. And aside from that, sometimes what he's calling, or it is calling, repetitive, we're reading poetry. And sometimes you say things to show the beauty of the words and the feelings that go with the words. And that's my problem with these kind of comments, because there's no heart. There you go. There's no heart.
There's no heart. That's a great way to describe it, Deb. There's no heart. Yeah. There is no sense of a connection to a poem, and there's no sense of trying to invest themselves in the work that's gone into creating the space of the poem. Another useless waste of time when there are so many things that we could be doing that would help, Dick. Anyway.
Oh, I agree.
Onwards and forwards. Thank you, Cardiff. Lovely place. I'm going on to Dave Muddy, Deb, and he needs to read it, so I'm going to read it. This is a poem called Big City Blues, and it's already won a gold medal, so that's pretty cool. Goes a bit like this. Big city lights highlighting the night, all alone, through crowded, taking in the sight. Life full of noise, through silence is what is heard. Looking from tall buildings, our vision is all blurred, failing to see purpose, for we are in a rush, suffocating under pressure from the constant crush. Big city dreams, reaching for higher heights, the aspirations of the masses. Ending up in bare, there appears to be no hope, balancing the demands of coping, treading a tightrope. failing to see meaning for their looking at themselves, searching for authentic answers only from ourselves. Big city hopes going down in flames, misplaced targets hiding from our aims, life full of confusion, missing the peace that we pursue, many trials and tribulations that we must pass through, failing to see the mercy discovered in his grace, leaning upon his understanding, real life we will embrace. End poem. There you go, Deb. A little bit of going to the city. What did you think?
You know, I liked it. The big city lights and the big city dreams and the big city hopes. Thing is, it doesn't matter where you live. There's always someone in a hometown wanting to be in a big city. And I think it's the middle one, big city dreams, reaching for higher heights, the aspirations of the masses ending up in fights. And that's so sadly true, especially nowadays, because, like, people want to go fly off the handle for the most minor things nowadays, whether it be in the car or, you know, in a store, walking by somebody, you know, it's just so the thought of the despair, and there appears to be no hope balancing, but then we get down to the hopes at the end, going down in flames, misplaced targets hiding from our aims. The title says it all, Big City Blues, and it's like he did a really amazing job of setting us up here to feel the impact. And yep. Multi-award winner, yeah, that's understandable. Fantastic share.
Now, I'm going to go back to go forward, as they say in the classics there. This is the second piece by Titus. Now, this was the piece that didn't get played for your show, so it's got a purple theme about it. This is A Penny for Your Thoughts. So I'm just going to go back to the board now and try and make sure. I think it's this one. So I am going to skip this. Here we go. We play that now.
A Penny for Your Thoughts. In dreams, the purple rain compelled in cluster. One imagines droplets each from the bough, over which there looms among many a fluster. The sway, it's put the call to sleep somehow. Vainglory, you, wisteria, have sung to the heavens to be that hanging garden. It is possible to lay and alleviate among a vast display of purple. Peace the pardon, unto which the Lord I pray to each day, an affectionate sway like no other, could the wind be kept to scent an array of thought. His passing breath did smother, kindness was believed to hold in breath, a penny for your thoughts, an untold debt.
There we go. Beautifully read. Love the use of the harp music as well. It's an amazing plant, the wisteria, Deb. It's just got that incredible colour and the incredible depth of the flowers as they are so closely together. So it's a beautiful image. And that was a beautiful verse there and from Titus, a really elegant piece of writing and reaction. What did you think, Deb?
I thought it was a beautiful brevity. I liked the, well, of course, the color, but I love the title, A Penny for Your Thoughts, because it's such a common expression, and it will grab everybody in one way or another, because at one time or another in your life, I'm sure someone has said that to you. And then, where's that? To the heavens, to be that hanging garden, it is possible to lay and alleviate among a vast display of purple. peace and pardon unto which the Lord I pray day. It's very spiritual. It's very beautiful. And the ending there, kindness was believed to hold in breath a penny for your thoughts, an untold depth. I like the way he enchanted a common phrase. Great brevity.
Yeah, you sort of reinvented it in a sort of new and sort of different sort of way, and rather than often it's sort of a phrase that people use just while they're trying to sort of work out where they want to talk next. But he claimed it and put it in, and it worked really well. So now I am up to depth. We've got three poems to go without anything from me or you. So we just need to think about whether we want to put a poem by you in. I've got one in the background if we want to. I thought we might go for Dave Prophet's poem next, and then do Phil the Poet, if that works, Steph.
Sure.
Yeah. The only question about that was, do you think that Dave might call in or call in later? But it's sort of 3/4 past the hour, so I'm sort of reasonably comfortable he's probably not calling in.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree, and the worst case scenario is that he does call and he gets to read. So.
And we can read it, yeah, exactly. So I'm putting his poem up on the board now, which is a piece called Questions from the Morrigans, and let's see if there's anything here that is okay. The author's note says it's a morning poem from my friend Tammy. There you go. And it goes a little bit like this. Out of my office window I see crows to you and ravens to me. They're out there most every day. I listen to what they have to say. Sometimes fiction, their curious interdiction, their objects of the dark mother's benediction. Shiny beak and shiny eye, across my yard they do fly. A large one lands on my shoulder, the rest tell me he's the beholder. The spokesbird, roundabout, questions to me, he calls out. Questions from his fine feathered friends, questions they ask, pay no amends. So he said to me, the croaking ravens, the whisperings, questions from his dark siblings as to who and what is fair. And so it went like this. David, your dark lady friend has such blackness of her hair, a mischievous twinkle in her eyes, their gaze to you shall mesmerise. Black pursuits their skin tones so well, this goddess makes it hard to tell if upon you she casts a spell, her velvet words that lift and dispel. Thoughtful as she always is, but gentle inquisitions never catch eyes, for she is a gentle soul. Her countenance we always extol. You see, the things behind her dark and pretty face, all those things that bind, all those things that chase, the shadow at odd angles race, scurry away to another place, her heart holds her words in such gentle grace. She talks to us and she talks to you, she talks to Tippy and his leaking canoe. We think the world's a better place because of Tammy's classic face, one of God's dark angels just like us. Morrigan's blackness, dark angels trust, ashes to ashes, as they say, dust to dust. So we shall leave her within your trust, her questions to us, soft and hushed. There is such beauty in her reverence from the refinements of her exquisite temperaments. We're pleased you see her, as she really is not just some pretty face that lives. Behind all the masks, those multiples of Eve, holds the perfumed cask of cotton candy and gunpowder, a fragrant task. The Morrigans flew to the top of Wildcat Mountain, across the street from my flop, They all sit around the snow water fountain, discuss the news from Dave's front yard, all the secrets they will guard. She talks to Morrigan's, while she talks to God. Now that's an interesting poem. I like the end too, but that's an interesting poem. That's a thoughtful, directed poem. It sort of takes the Dark Mother along with it, but sort of takes the Dark Mother along for the ride rather than the Dark Mother being in front of it. It's quite different. Impressive, though. What did you think? Yeah?
Yeah, I agree. I like when he incorporates her, but this time she's sort of in the background as if to be like giving him a little advice and his impression on this person, and she is pleased that they're friends. And I love towards the end there when he starts to talk about the Morrigans and stuff like that. There was just something so visual, like the Morrigans flew to the top of Wildcat Mountain across the street from my flop. They sit around a snow water fountain, and I like that he used across the street from my flop. I haven't heard that expression in a while. And when he turns around and takes the art, and he took the face of the person that the poem is written for, and then I've seen the art in the background before, and he superimposes, and he does such a cool job with them. So it pulls the birds and stuff into the poem. And I liked it, the spokesperson, I thought that was really clever there. He's got the details in his stories, and I liked that she said, David, your dark lady friend has such blackness of her hair, mischievous twinkle in her eyes, their gaze to you shall mesmerize. So like you could hear the admiration that the Dark Mother has for the lady with, I'm assuming that, yeah, there you go, the dark hair. So you're right.
Yeah.
From our storyteller poet.
Yeah, he is. He's a storyteller poet. And fine job there, Dave. Well done. Enjoyed. And had lovely cadence for the read, too. So you made it easy to read for me. So thank you. Now, talking about people who support the show, I don't think there's a week go by that we don't hear something from Phil the poet. He always gives us a SoundCloud too, which is super appreciated to hear his voice and how he goes about reciting the poem, not just what the poem is. So this is the SoundCloud from Phil. We'll be back in a sec to discuss it.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Purple Sky Twilight. Purple sky twilight shining upon a cool, crystal, clear sea that sways back and forth over rough rocks, smoothed by a loving touch in time, in total awe of a perfect masterpiece. I lie back to enjoy this magenta flow as the colours start to mix into a cosmic soup bowl, breathing, living, painting, that no words can describe. Turquoise reflection kisses my feet with a tingling touch of letting me know that this whole scene is not some crazy dream, nor an image created from my own imagination. This is beautiful reality in perfect purple hue that painters have tried to capture but have failed. Where the poet has dropped his pen in awe of a scene that evades his expectations. And so, just for this one moment, I lie down and look upon the twilight sky. In the silence, I just gaze in wonder of the artist's perfect masterpiece. End poem.
Yeah, well done, Phil. I, as you probably know, Well, I've started painting only recently, and it is interesting because I still have that sense of looking at something, like you say in the second last stanza there, where the poet has dropped his pen in awe of a scene that evades his expectations. And I'm still in the form, though, as the second line says, of a painter who's tried to capture a scene but has failed. And it's happened to me a number of times where I can actually describe it in words and I can't yet get the... I don't yet have the skill in order to put that on a canvas. So I really enjoyed that perspective of comparing the two. Deb, what did you think of Phil's piece?
I think it's absolutely gorgeous. And I like the part that you pointed out, too, where it's like a mic drop, but in this case it's a pen drop in awe. And it's because, try though he might, the most seasoned or the beginner artist can never, ever capture what we see in nature's colors, in the eye of the creator, and it's just stunning. And in the silence, I just gaze in wonder of the artist's perfect masterpiece. And you just know, because he capitalized the A in the artist, to whom he's referring. And I think that it is a beautiful, spiritual poem. And I noticed at the bottom that it was from a picture prompt from Crystal Hope, and I was almost going to say Miss Crystal Hope, but she's now Mrs. Crystal Hope, and I hope that they are having a wonderful time married, and we miss you, Crystal. Amazing poem, Phil.
We do miss you, Crystal. You're a fantastic poet, Tess, and always beautifully descriptive and amazingly optimistic. I always loved that about Crystal's poetry. It's just she always sort of sketches out a space that there's something happy and peaceful in. Okie doke, Deb. Well, I've left it till sort of last moment because I was hoping we might get a few more people to hear this, because our regular contributor. Lawrence 67 has pulled out not the normal quill, but the big super special quill to do a sort of all encompassing sort of piece that refers to you and me and everybody else along the way. So I was going to have that as our last poem, Deb, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
There's a few me-isms in this. This is Do You Have a Sense of Humour by Lawrence 67. And see, it got through, Lawrence, without any changes. I want you to note that. And this is The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and His Homie Alfie. And we start with Wayne. And in one smooth motion, she slit his throat while simultaneously with the long tongs that she carried in her purse poked, gouged, and pulled his eyeballs out of their sockets, leaving nothing but the tears of a clown. And they lived happily ever after. And me. Ha! Wayne, you're so funny. And ha, patter. What did you think of Wayne's love sonnet? Another Wayne classic. So much fun. Oh, yeah, a marvellous job. Descriptive, bouncy. Had that playful rhetoric that made the poem bounce. And Wayne, you did a great job reading it. Kudos to you. Yep. Good job. Great job. And next, we have a regular contributor to the show, Lawrence 67, and he has his own style. This poem entitled Do You Have a Sense of Humour? And it goes something like this. I'm going to rap this song. If you know the words, then just sing along. I don't mean to boast, but I'm the rapping host. My rapping style is heard coast to coast. I rap real fast. I like freestyle, so listen up while I fill up your cup. Let's go. Boo, 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 booty, babe, hit me through all the face. Yeah, yeah, bop, bop, bop through my cup. Yeah, yeah. I softened it up a bit, you know. Didn't want to get into too much trouble with PG people. And Deb, what did you think of this beautifully written masterpiece, said, you know, I thought it was fun. And it made me giggle. We know he has 96,386,504 poems on this style of subject. And, well, you must be having fun to have that amount of rights, right? AP, yep. Yep. Thank you, Deb. And Rack, what did you think? Raconteur. Yeah, Nigel. And shoot, what is that other cat's name? I have it on the tip. Deb, Alfie. Ah, Rack. Yeah. Thanks, Deb. Yeah, Alfie, you know, I'm not sure if they're real cats or his cats or they just come by and talk to him. Yeah. Lauren 67, he's out there sometimes. AP, yeah, for sure. Well, it looks like we're out of time. Good night, everybody. End poem. Thank God. Deb.
So good.
What? I
had to stay on mute. Yeah, no, I had to stay on mute while you were reading. It's priceless. It definitely proves that he listens to the shows. He's got little nuances of each of us in there. Even as he has me giggle in here, he puts my giggle into the poem. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but this was fun. As he wrote me in saying here. No, seriously.
That's it.
It is fantastic. I have to save it. I'm really glad that he stumbled upon us and continues to support the show because it's always great to hear his stuff. And just well done.
I always enjoy reading his work. I know that sounds sort of, you know, thing to say, but I mean, and I do say regularly that one of the things I don't do is I don't write humour very often. And so, you know, the once every 3 months that I actually write a humorous poem, I sort of save it everywhere because it just doesn't happen very often. But Lawrence just goes there every single time. And what's, you know, really clear about this poem is that, you know, he listens really carefully too because he's captured a whole heap of stuff, whether it be about Wayne or you or me or Haddo or each of us quite different in our own comments and how we do those comments. And, you know, it really rang true. So well done, Lawrence 67. Thank you for taking the time to listen, to have all that feedback. So, and it coming back into us in a funny way. It's great. So Deb, we've got to the hour and I think we've done the show.
I think so.
So my thanks to everybody who sent in the pieces. Deb, did you want to say a few words about what's coming up on A Team of Voices in the next little while?
I can do that. So let's see here. I believe that there should be, yes, here it is. Sunday Night Murder and Mayhem with JCA and Sweet is the show that had to be postponed on the first week of the first Sunday of the month because of issues in the studio. And it's the Yokesy mystery. And he's got some interesting information on the board. And he usually shares some really fascinating stuff on the shows too. So you could check out his topic. And he is, unless something changed, he's going live at 10:30 this week instead of 9:30. Then on Monday, you could stop by and see me at 10 p.m. for the continuation of the color series. We're doing yellow. Choose your picture. And
yellow.
Read it. Yellow.
Yes. Yellow.
There's a ton of stuff to pick through. And then let's see here. On Tuesday, we have another edition of Dungeons and Dragons with Sky Darkholm. She goes live between 8 and 9, depending on when she gets home from work.
Yep.
And then on Wednesday, why don't you tell everyone about Wednesday?
Yes. Well, Wednesday is the Anzac Day show, so Anzac Day being the day in Australia and New Zealand where we celebrate all of those people who sacrificed so much to give us the countries that we have today. And they did so in a number of wars over the last 120-odd years. And we celebrate their service, and we're celebrating that this year through a series of pictures that Deb has found online from students and kids that sketching out their thoughts about Anzac Day. And so I'd strongly encourage you to go to the board, have a look, pick up an image that resonates with you and write a poem on this wonderful subject, and that's coming up on Wednesday.
Awesome. And then just keep an eye on the chat wall for Sweet Pea's topic for Thursday at 10. And there's the next several days.
I think we've got a set of stuff there. And so my thanks to Jeff. My thanks to all of the poets who put a poem up on the board. And always great to read your works. And we will be back in a week's time for another set of open poetry, Deb.
We sure will.
Okay.
Great show, AP.
Thanks for your help, and we will talk very soon. Thanks, everybody, and always a pleasure to be with you. And we'll be back in a week's time. Have fun, everybody. Have a good week.
Have a respect. Good night.
Okay. Bye.